originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. An intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who took Derby 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pradnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barrage aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano. A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm your host, retired jockey Christina McManigal, and I am joining you tonight from our Jimmy John's of Lexington, Kentucky studio. I would like to thank everyone listening tonight on Sirius 219, XM 206, and also to those of you listening to our website at www.horseracingradio.net. A portion of the proceeds from this show go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF provides financial assistance to riders who have suffered devastating on-track injuries such as paralysis and brain damage. So please, if you are able to help, visit their website. That's www.pdjf.org. So I cannot begin to tell you how excited I am and what an honor it is to interview this evening's guest. He was the youngest rider at the age of 28 to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. He was the first jockey to hit the 9,000 win mark. He won the Derby in 1984 with Swale and the Belmont 3 times. He won 7 Breeders' Cup races and he's won 5 Eclipse Awards. With 9,530 wins and over $270 million in earnings, it is an honor to introduce jockey Lafitte Pincai Jr. Lafitte, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you, Christine. Thank you very much.
Lafitte, thank you so much for taking time out of your day. I guess we interrupted your golf game today, yeah?
Yeah. Well, I've been playing golf lately a lot, and but one day that I don't play, it'll be okay. Don't worry about that.
Are you pretty good?
Well, I'm getting better. I started about 5 years ago, and it's for me, it's a challenge. It's a very tough game. When I was younger, my friend, they used to invite me to play, and I thought it was a silly game. I didn't think it was nothing to it, to put a little ball in the hole. And but I'm telling you, it's so challenging, you know. I'm trying to get better. I am playing with guys that that are better than I am. And I try to beat them. And it's fun when I beat them, you know. So I'm getting better there. And I'm very proud of myself.
It's a tough game. I don't have the patience for it, Lafitte. But do you find when you're out there playing, your competitive edge kicks in?
Yes, it's a lot of competitive with yourself and with your friends, you know, and believe me, it's like it's a lot like any sport, you know. Like when I was riding and I had some good mounts and I haven't won a race, it was tough, you know. I'm trying to win a race, and for some reason, right after you win a race, you get the adrenaline going, everything you get strong again, you get very positive again. And the same thing in golf. You are not playing good, and all of a sudden you have a good shot, and believe me, everything comes up. You know, you get the adrenaline, and you want to keep doing it. You know, and it's a lot of fun. You know, but like I said, to me, I'm glad that I found this, that I can keep myself occupied and enjoy myself sometime.
Lafitte, do you have any other hobbies that keeps you busy these days?
No, that's about it. That's about it. You know, I go out at night time sometime and enjoy my life. And but I'm busy too during the day. I visit my mother. She's in a rest home right now. And I take care of my house. I take care of my dog. And I'm traveling a lot too. I go to Panama sometimes, and sometimes I do work for the I should say I am at the events of the ADJF. So you know, there's always something to do with me.
Love to hear that, Lafitte. And do you have much to do with the jockey school there in Panama?
Well, once a year, they have a race for me over there, dedicated to me. So I go over there, I present the trophy, and then I take a day to go and talk to the kids at the school. And I tell them about my career, what I used to do. I give them some tips that used to help me when I was riding. And they love to know about my diet, you know, about what I eat, what I used to do when I was riding. So it's a lot of fun to be with them. It's a lot of little kids, you know, very young, and they look pretty good. And I have a lot of fun doing that.
I'm sure that just is such a great opportunity for them to get to speak with you. And what an opportunity. Now, when you were young, though, growing up in Panama, you didn't have the opportunity to really attend a jockey school, correct?
Well, they have a, they didn't really have a jockey school. They have a professor that he was a jockey for many years before, and he was a retired jockey. And he used to get us in the corner, and he used to tell us stories and what we should do on a horse, how we didn't have the equisizer then. Now they have equisizer and everything. But we used to have some barrels, and we used to put some ropes as a stirrup, and he used to get us there on top of that and tell us what to do with the reins and how to hand ride and whip and everything, you know. So, but the best thing that I learned from him was that you always, he told me, he told us, he said, listen, you always have to be in good shape. Continuously, you always be in good shape, because you never know when you're going to need your energy and your fitness to win a race. And he was so right about that, you know. And I tried to do that during my career. I was always trying to be fit, whatever I was doing, in good shape, you know, try to ride my horses as best as I could. And believe me, it helped me a lot. It helped me tremendously.
Lafitte, how did you juggle that, maintaining that fitness and being so strong? And I've seen pictures of you when you rode. You were just solid muscle. But how did you juggle that with your weight?
Well, everything was about fitness. You know, I didn't rely on food that much, because I couldn't eat that much. Every time I kind of tried to eat things that I knew that would give me energy, I would gain the weight. You know, so I had to just try to be fit. I get up early, I do my legs exercises, I go and work my horses, and then I go and jog around the track. And it's a lot of it's in your mind, too. If you love the game, believe me, it can do wonders, you know. You cannot fall asleep in this game. You always have to be alert and learning and see what you can do to improve yourself, and at the same time improve the horses that you ride. And that's what I did during my career. And I know sometimes I was there and I was very, very weak riding, but I just kept giving my best, you know. And sometimes you ride horses that you win, and it give you the adrenaline to keep going. You know, when you become a winner, it's an addiction. You want to win all the time, and you do anything you can to win. And that's what keeps you going, you know. At the same time, sometimes you try to have a good time, but you know, you have to be careful with that. You can't, and Natalie cannot have a good time all the time. You have to watch out with that.
Lafitte, I read a funny story that when you were a teenager, your mother was very concerned that you weren't eating, and she kept trying to get you to eat, but you were, at the time, you were told that you might be too big to be a jockey, So tell us about your mother in that situation.
Yes, that's right. I remember when I went to the track, to the races, because before that, I wanted to be a baseball player. I was picked in a selection to go to Nicaragua to play in the Little League. And we went to Nicaragua, and we won. And then when we come back, the coach he called me aside and he said, listen, I want to give you a good advice. You are a good baseball player, but you're going to be too small. Why don't you be a jockey like your father? Because my father was a jockey, but I didn't know him. He was riding in a country, Venezuela. And I was crushed because that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a baseball player. So I'm thinking, you know, jockey. I don't want to be a jockey, you know. But I kept playing baseball, and the guy was right. The coach was right. I kept, you know, small. And then when I decided at the 15 years old, I wanted to help my mother. You know, she was working so hard. We were very poor. So I told her that I wanted to be a jockey, try to be a jockey to let me go to the track, and I had to fight with her for her to let me go. So finally, I convinced her, and she let me go. And I remember the first day that I went to the track, and people find out that I was the son of jockey Lafitte Pincay. I could hear the guy say, that's Pincay's son, that's Pincay's son. So... But a trainer came up to me and he told me, listen, you're going to be too big to be a jockey. And I'm like, wow. I said, too small to play baseball, too big to be a jockey. But, you know, right away I said, no, I promise that I'm going to. I told him, I said, no, I'm going to make it. I'm going to ride. I don't know how many years, but I'm going to ride. And then I started going to the track every day and right away started taking care of what I ate. I was only 15 years old. And my mother got very worried because I didn't want to eat. I want to eat very, very little. And I think that saved me, you know, saved me from getting big and not start fighting the way. Well, I always fought my way, but I never let myself go. During my career, I never let myself go. I never like, well, I'm going to eat a lot. And then when I come back, I'm going to reduce. No, When I was not riding is when I watch even myself more, because I know if I let myself go, I was going to have a tough time to get my weight down. So I never did, you know, all throughout my career. And all to this time, I never let myself go. I always watch what I eat. I still look very, people, when they see me at the track, they say, why don't you come back to riding? Because I still look small, you know, I still look like I could ride a horse, and I feel great this way, you know. I'm still an athlete.
Jockey Lafitte Pincay Jr. joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So Lafitte, you started riding in Panama, and how old were you at the time, and how long did you ride there before moving to the States?
Well, yes, it took me 2 years to get my license. I started riding in 1964, and I started winning races a lot right away, and became the leading rider in Panama. I rode there for 2 years, and Mr. Fred Hooper sent me a contract for me to go to the United States. But first, he wanted to see me wore some horses for him in Miami. So my mother didn't really want to let me go because I was so small, you know, and I mean so young. And then finally, you know, she let me go. I went to Miami. I worked a couple of horses for Mr. Hooper, and we signed a contract for 3 years. So I went back to Panama, wait for my paper to get fixed, and I weigh but I would say about maybe 8 or 9 months, and then when I got my paper, I came back to the United States, and then I've been here ever since. You know, everybody from Panama in those times want to come to United States. Still, you know, the young jockeys over there, their dream is to come to United States, and I'm glad I did. You know, it was tough to leave, because when I left Panama, I was the leading rider over there. I was making a lot of money for a poor country like Panama. I was making between $800 and $1,200 a week. You know, I had a new car. I had I just bought a house for my mother. I had a girlfriend, and I was having fun, you know, winning races and all that. And then I left. I left for just to come and try over here in this country. And it's not easy, you know. You come with a lot of pressure. You want to make it. And I did the best thing I could to make it. And pretty soon I started winning a lot of races. And here I am.
Well, and pretty soon, didn't you start off pretty much immediately doing very well here in the States? But I have to imagine that was pretty hard leaving your family and coming to a foreign country for you. And did you speak English when you arrived?
Not at all. Not at all. It was tough. Believe me, there were a couple of times that I thought about going back, you know, because I was winning a race, like A5. And then at the beginning, it wasn't so easy, you know. I mean, I won races, but I was used to win a lot of races in Panama. So I was winning a race one day, and then the next day I probably didn't have a mount, and I did that for a little bit, you know. And then finally I won some races, and I started winning, and, you know, people started using me. But once I started going, believe me, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun when I started winning races and became the leading rider in Chicago, and then I went to New York. And in New York, my first year in New York, I did very well, too. And then I came to California. And in California, I think what helped me was that the first race that I won, I beat Shoemaker and Knowles the first day of the meeting. And, boy, that race is really, really, really helped me out. And pretty soon I was riding a lot of horses and winning a lot of races. I finished second to Shoemaker my first season in California. And then I was going between California, Chicago, and New York. And it wasn't easy, you know, because every time you go to a new place, you have to start all over again, you know, and three different places, you know. So it wasn't easy, but I did well.
Why did you decide to make that move to California?
Well, when I came to California, I love California. I like the races. I like the people. I like the people everywhere. You know, they were nice people with me. That's one thing that it was so nice to meet so many people in Chicago, in New York, and in California. But over here, I met my first wife. And I just love California, you know. I like the style of racing here, and I like everything over here. And I decided when my contract was over, I was going to stay here. And then by that time, I was already married, and I'm glad I did. I love California.
You mentioned Shoemaker there in California. Who else was in the jocks room at the time?
Well, in those times, Shoemaker was winning all the races here in California. And then in those times, jockeys from New York used to fly to California to ride. Jockeys like Eddie Belmonte, Bobby Ossery, Walter Blum, and a few of those jockeys would come over here, and there were some good jockeys over here like Jerry Lambert, Donald Pierce, Alvaro Pineda. It was a tough colony, and California was a tough place to ride, very tough place to ride, because everything was very fast. I had to change completely my way of riding in California, because in Panama we didn't try to go to the lead like in California. We try, and so I came with that style, coming from behind style, you know, waiting for the last part. But over here, I found pretty quickly that you cannot stay that far back. You have to always be in contention, you know, to win races in California. So I had to adapt myself. If I want to change my style, I don't think I would have won so many races.
Let's talk about that briefly here, Lafitte. So your style in Panama was mostly come from behind. Now, was there a big difference from the Panama riders to the riders here in the States and the way they rode?
Oh yeah, when I came from Panama, I thought I knew how to ride. Believe me, I learned a lot in this country. I learned a lot. I look at the other jockeys that I was competing against, the jockeys like, especially in New York, Angel Cordero, Jorge Velasquez, who's a Panamanian that he was with me in Panama for a while, Braulio Baeza, you know, there was a jockey, Larry Adams, you know, you learn everything from, you pick up things from jockeys, you know, and, I knew that I had to better my style. I came back here and my style wasn't that good. So I tried to make a better style. I always thought that a good jockey should have a good style of riding, you know. So it took me a little while, but finally I was pleased with the way I was riding.
Lafitte, you've mentioned so many great names in riding, but when you first arrived to the States, was there one particular rider that you looked up to and you wanted to copy their style?
Oh, definitely. Well, I didn't want to copy the style because we were different, but I loved the way he was. I love Bill Shoemaker. He was my idol. I used to hear from him since I was a little kid. And coming over here and meet him and become his friend, you know, that was so nice, you know. And we became a good friend, and I just loved his disposition. I was very, I used to get mad when I didn't win a race, or I got shut off in the race, and I would get very upset. And then at night time when I go out with, I will go out with him, you know, and he would say, listen, just take it easy. I said, you're young. You're going to learn. He said, I used to be the same way. Don't worry. He said, but you got to change. You just change. Little by little, you'll change, you know, and don't get so upset because you don't want to affect you for your next race, you know. So just take it easy. I said, races, there's going to be a lot of them. You're going to lose. You're going to win some, and you're going to lose some. And believe me, pretty soon it got into me that I have to be that way to continue. You know, you can't just be mad all the time because you didn't win. And that was his disposition, and I love that. I love the way he was. And then there is a few things that I learned from him, too. Like I didn't think it was so important when I came to this country to make a horse change lead, you know. And one day I noticed that he was fighting this horse, making him go in and out. And after the race, I asked him, I said, shoo, what were you doing with this horse? So you kept going in and going out and going in. He said, oh, I was trying to make a switch lead. He didn't want a switch lead. And he said, if you go in the wrong lead the whole way, he's going to get tired very quickly, you know? So I realized how important it is to make the horse change lead, even if he doesn't want to. And I just thought that they automatically did, and if they didn't, it's because they were comfortable that way. But not at all. He said, "No, make him switch. Make him switch. It's the best thing for them." You know. So yes, I started doing that from then on, and it's very important. He was so right about that.
So, Lafitte, hearing you describe your relationship with Shoemaker and the respect you had for him, I can only imagine how much that meant to you when you broke his record, when you won your 8,834th victory in 99. That had to just mean so much to you.
Oh, definitely, because there was a time, not only did I thought he was the greatest, but there was a time that I didn't think I was going to do it. I wasn't doing any good. I knew that I had to probably leave California to go someplace south so I could try to break that record, and I was planning going up north. Nobody was riding me, but I knew that I wasn't riding well. I was very weak, you know. I think the years of riding every day and not eating well, it took a toll on me, you know. I was getting older, and then at the last minute, I was going to go up north California, and I changed my mind. I've been married for about my second marriage, about four years, and I had a little boy, 3 years old. And I said, you know, I'm going to give it one more try over here. I want to give it one more try over here in California. I said, but if I'm going to stay here, I have to change my way of riding. I have to do something because I know that I'm not riding good. If I keep riding the way I'm riding, I am not going to go anywhere. So what I did is I changed completely. I started changing completely. You know, I had never been a drinker. I used to drink maybe a couple cups of wine on weekends. And then I completely quit doing that. I started eating a lot of healthy food, like fruit and a little bit of nuts and a little bit of grains and a little bit of everything. I put in a little bit of oil on my body. And I don't know, wow, it makes so much difference. I was going to be 50 years old. It make a lot of difference in my stamina and my energy. I start winning races. I got smarter again. I thing that I haven't done in a long time, I start doing it again. I mean, it was completely different, my way of riding. And I'm pretty soon I started winning races. And I kept winning races. And I remember one of the, after I've been doing this for about 2 months, the guy from the press came down and he says, listen, I have seen you riding here for many since you came to this country. I said, you're riding just as good as when you started. And I told him, I said, you noticed that, didn't you? And he says, yes. And I said, well, I tell you, I changed my diet and I feel very energetic again, you know? So sure enough, I started winning races and then I ended up breaking the record. And I'm telling you, that was a dream come true for me. Breaking Shoemaker's record, and then I kept my winning races and until I had a spear and I had to retire. But up to then, I was having fun again and get up in the morning and I couldn't wait to go to the track and ride my horses.
Lafitte, just about a minute before we have to go to commercial break, but did you find it was harder as you got older? You mentioned you were 50 at the time when you decided to change your diet. Was it harder to convince people to ride you when you were getting older?
Oh, definitely. Yes. I there was one trainer that there was always, he always had a horse for me, and it was Bill Spahr. This part, he always had a horse for me. He always put me on his horses. Sometimes you have to have a guy that really trusts you and really wants to believe in you. And just like Whittingham was with Shoemaker when he was getting older, same thing with Bill Spahr. And I'm telling you, when I start winning all those races, when I start being good again, you know, I rode a lot of his horses, and we win a lot of races. We just keep winning races, and it was fun. It was fun to win for him, and that's something that I will never forget, you know?
Lafitte, we have to take a quick commercial break. Folks, stay with us. You are listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judges' choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Being a jockey may be one of the more dangerous professions in all of sports. In a split second, you can go from the top of the standings to never being able to stand again. I'm Mike Penna, and over the years, I've had the privilege of talking with many of the top jockeys in thoroughbred racing. And to a person, they will tell you that on any given day, before any given race, when they get a leg up, there's no guarantee they'll return the way they left. It's simply the reality of being a jockey. The Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund does amazing work, providing financial assistance to some 60 former jockeys who have suffered catastrophic on-track injuries. Since its founding 10 years ago, the PDJF has disbursed over $7 million to permanently disabled jockeys. And I'm proud to say that the PDJF is the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network, but the only way they can continue helping those disabled riders who have given our sport so much is through your generosity and support. So I encourage you to visit pdjf.org and start making a difference today.
You're- You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Affirmed on the outside has the lead by a neck. Coastal on the inside moves into second by a half length. It's Spectacular Bed between those two in third, but dropping back a bit. Gallant Best is still fourth as they enter the stretch. On the outside, Affirmed on the rail, it's Coastal between those two, Spectacular Bid. Those three now across the track, approaching the eighth pole. Affirmed once again draws clear by a length. On the inside, it's Spectacular Bid in second. Coastal is dropping back in third, past the 16th pole. Affirmed on the outside takes this race. Horse of the year, Affirmed in front.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I'm your host, Christina McManigle, and I am joined tonight by jockey Lafitte Pinkai Jr. Lafitte, we just heard the replay of the 79 Jockey Club Gold Cup with your victory aboard Affirmed. What do you feel when you hear that replay?
Oh, it's great. That was a great race. I tell you, I never experienced so much, tension. And there was a lot of publicity going to that race because it was a firm from the West against a spectacular win, spectacular bid from the East. And there was so much publicity and a lot of tension in the race, and I during the race I had my eyes on a spectacular bid, and I thought I rode a very good race, and coming down the stretch when Costa took the lead, I still was thinking about a spectacular bid. I wasn't worried about Costa. I knew I had him beat. But a spectacular bid came running in the inside again, and I still had a good horse, enough horse to beat him.
Well, and tell us what you were thinking when you hit the quarter pole. You were trying to drift Spectacular Bid out to the outside, and then he decided to go to the inside. And yes. What were you thinking during the race?
Yes, well, Shoemaker was outside of me, and I knew that Spectacular Bid, he likes to log in, and I was not going to make it easy on him to go around me. So I just every time I just kept my horse wide, and I knew he couldn't go around because his horse was trying to log in. So finally he took back and went inside, and I kept my horse out because Angel Cordero and George Velasquez told me, "Say, Lafitte, whatever you do, don't go inside. Stay way out." So they were my coach before the race, you know. So I followed they what they told me. So I kept my horse in the best part of the track, and I got to beat him, you know. Those were good tips.
Definitely. Did Shoemaker say anything to you after the race?
No, he never said anything. He was a very gentleman. He knows that I play some tricks on him, you know. But we do that, you know, as long as it's legal, as long as it's nothing dirty, you know, don't bump his horse or anything. It's okay, you know. We knew that I did a good job, and he just never said anything. And we remain friends, you know. We were always a good friend. Yes.
Well, if you tell us how you got the mount on Affirmed, who of course won the Triple Crown the year prior in '78, how did you get the mount?
Well, when he was a 2 year old, he came to California, and I was running for Lazaro Barrera. And I woke him one morning, and he told me, make him work. He's a little lazy. So I working 5/8 mile, and the whole time he has his ears up, and he felt to me like he didn't do much, you know. So after I pull him up, Lazaro Barrera asked me, he says, "How far do you think you went?" And I said, "Oh, I think he went about a minute." And he says, "Yeah, he went in 58 and 2.
Wow.
I couldn't believe it, you know? So I said, "This is a runner." He won the UNI very easy by 8 lengths. And then I was winning so many races in California And during the, we went to the, that was in Hollywood Park. So we went to the meeting of Del Mar. In Del Mar, the day that he was supposed to run in Saratoga, my agent told me, he said, listen, we got a lot, we were fighting for Liam Ryder in Del Mar. He said, and my agent said to me, listen, we're riding a lot of horses over here that day. You had, he said, most of your horses are favorites. And that's a small stake where a firm is going to run. He said, I'm going to talk to Lazaro, see if he let us off for this race, and we ride him in the next race. And I said, are you sure Lazaro is going to let you do that? He said, yeah. I said, okay, if he's okay with him, that's fine with me. So he talked to Lazaro, and Lazaro said, yeah, okay, you stay over there. And I run him over here, and you ride him next time. So Steve Catton started winning a lot of races in New York. He was a wonderful apprentice. You know, he was winning everything, and then he got the mounts on a firm. And sure enough, he won on a firm. And the next time, the next day came up, and my agent wanted to go on riding, Lazaro told him no. He said, no, you don't want to come and ride him for, I can't remember the name of the race. He said, Steve is going to ride him. So I lost the mount. Mm. So Steve ended up riding him in the Triple Crown. He won the Kentucky. He won the Preakness. He won the Belmont. And then when he came to California, the horse started, for some reason, the horse started to tail off. He finished third or second in the first race. And then he ran another stake, I think the Malibu, one of those races, and he finished second or third again. And Steve Catton was in a slump. He couldn't win a race in all that time. And Lazaro decided to make a change and put me back on the horse. And sure enough, he won the Stroop by 10 lengths. And then he came back in the Santa Anita Handicap, and he won by 4 or 5 lengths. And then we went to Hollywood Park, and then he won the California, and then he won the Hollywood Gold Cup. And then he just kept winning, you know, until he went to New York and he won the Jockey Club Gold Cup. But there's no question in my mind that he's the best horse I ever rode. He was so smart. He remembered things, you know. He was good at the gate. He was always out of the gate first. And you can count on him. He was a horse that every jockey would love to ride a horse like that, you know. So he was a fighter. He see another horse beside him, and boy, he didn't want to get past. And it was a lot of fun to ride him, and I rode him with a lot of confidence every time I did.
Was it true you two never lost a race together?
No, I never lost a race. The only race I lost, he got disqualified in the Traverse. And that was because I was careless on the turn. I didn't know I had Velasquez inside of me. I would have hoped that he would have let me know he was inside, you know. But I thought at least I was a couple of lengths in front. I didn't realize that he was there. And coming down in the turn, I came in and he had to take up. But believe me, he was not going to be the horse, but the foul was there, and the steward had to take my number down. And there's something I felt terrible. I felt so bad, you know, because it was a mistake on my part. An honest mistake, because I didn't know he was there. You know, I'll never, never done something like that on purpose, you know, shot somebody, especially Velasquez, we were very tight, you know. We were always very good friends, and I think he was upset, but he never told me anything. Until later in the years, we talked about it, and I said, George, I didn't know you were there, you know. And I say, if you would have said something, believe me, I would have junked this horse outside. I say, I didn't need to do that to beat Alidar that day, you know. And sure enough, you know, but it's something that happened in races sometimes that you wish you could have a run the race again.
Jockey Lafitte Pinkai Jr. joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Lafitte, let's talk about your Derby victory in 84 with Swale. Now, that was, you'd ridden the Derby how many times previously?
Yeah, many times, maybe at 12, 13 races, something like that. Maybe more. I don't remember, but many. And I remember that year on Swell. I knew that that was my last chance to win a Derby. I said, if I don't win this Derby, I don't think I'm ever going to win it. You know, and I just thought that I was going to be one of those jockeys that will never win a Kentucky Derby, you know, and I would have to live with that. And my wife was very sick at the time, and she couldn't go with me, and she'd been going with me every single year. Every single year she had gone with me, and she couldn't make it. So I went down, and I remember telling Tony, my agent, Tony Matos, I said, Tony, either we're going to get beat off, way off, or we're going to win by five. I told him that. And I went down, and I remember I felt pressure because, I believe me, I knew that that was going to be my last chance. And I remember the morning of the race, I say a prayer, you know. I said, God, I never asked you to win a race. I just want you to keep me safe, me and my friends. But today, can you give me a little push? So I think it worked for me, you know, because he won the race, and he won pretty easily, and that was probably one of my happiest days in my career and as a jockey. You know, coming from Panama and hearing from the Kentucky Derby since you are a little kid, and then coming to this country, this great country, and winning that race. I mean, wow, what a thrill, you know? That was a thrill for me.
God was listening that day. He gave you a little push.
Yeah.
Now, how about your very first Triple Crown victory ever in the Belmont with Conquistador Cielo, who won easy that day for Woody Stevens? What was that like when you actually won your first Belmont?
Yes, that was a very lucky ride that I got at the last minute. You know, I was riding Hollywood Park, and I just came back from winning a race, and my agent Tony Matos came down, and he said, "I said, listen, you are going to tomorrow. You, how about going to ride Conquistador Cielo in the Belmont?" And I thought he was kidding me. You know, I said, "Are you sure?" He said, "Yeah. I just got the money. If you want to go, I said, "Sure, I want to go. Are you kidding?" So sure enough, that same night, I took a plane and I went to New York. And prepare myself for the race, and boy, what a race he ran that day. It was just unbelievable race. He won so easy, that horse. He was a freak, really a very special horse. And like I said, my first Triple Crown race, you know, and it was so nice to win that race.
It was a sloppy track that day, wasn't it?
Yes, it was very sloppy. I kept my horse outside, and then I make the sharp cut on the turn, and it was perfect, you know. I was trying to keep the horse away from the other horses because I figure, you know, he might get ranked with me. I don't want him to get ranked. But no, believe me, he was so nice on the lead and everything, you know. So, and it went so easy, you know. Great race.
Another pretty nice horse you rode, Lafitte, was Spendabuck in the Jersey Derby, and obviously Spendabuck won the Derby previously with Angel Cordero. So tell me how you got that mount.
Well, Angel Cordero was having trouble with a contract a verbal contract that he had with one of the owners over there in New York. I don't remember his name, but he was trying to, he had, the owner had a horse in the race in New York, and he wanted Cordero to ride him, and Cordero wanted to ride Spendabuck, and he was trying to do everything to ride Spendabuck in Jersey, and the owner didn't let him go, you know. So I got him out, and ended up winning with him, you know. But believe me, Spendi Bock, what he that day he won on because he's a good horse. Because coming down the stretch, believe me, I didn't feel like I had any horse. I whip him very early, which I never used to do with good horses. I always wait until the stretch to whip my horses. And before we got to the stretch, I whip him a couple of times trying to wake him up. I say, wow, I don't think I have any horse. And believe me, he won on guts. You know, he won on courage.
Well, give yourself some credit too, Lafitte. That was maybe one of the best rides I've ever seen. I encourage our listeners to go watch the replay because you literally carried that horse to the wire. I've never seen anything like it. And obviously you were very accomplished at doing that. You were so strong, but you were worried, I'm assuming, a little bit at the top of the stretch.
Well, I was worried, and I after I hit him, I just tried to hold him together, you know. I hand riding, you know. I didn't want to get into the way with him, you know. But I just I just kept praying that he lasts, you know, because I didn't feel any horse under me. Believe me, I didn't feel any. He had a problem that he used to be a bleeder, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe he bled that day, which I'm sure he did, because I didn't feel nothing under me. I didn't feel like he was some horse that you can feel it. They still running with him. I didn't feel it, you know. I didn't feel it, and I know what kind of a horse he was, you know. So I walked in one day, and I think he broke the trot record in the morning walking.
Wow,
such a good horse, yes. But
So, Lafitte, I got to tell you, when I was doing research for this show, I printed out all of your graded stakes victories, and I ran out of ink because I had so many pages. So I wish we could get to them all, but another horse I would like to talk about is Landalusi and the great filly trained by Lucas, who, of course, we didn't really get to see her full potential. But tell us her story.
Yeah, very true. I got that mount from Luca. I was running a lot of horses from him, and she the first time I rode Landalusi, she won. And when I remember coming back and I saw the time, I thought it was a mistake, you know. I thought it was a mistake, And then I think he won in 108 and 1, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then his next start, she won the stake by I don't know how many lengths, 25 lengths, something. Oof, for the length of the stretch she won. And she won so easy. And then she won about 5 or 6 races, and they were all very easily. And then she got sick, you know, which, you know, how many times you get a chance to get on a horse like her, you know, and she gets sick and die, you know. That was a tragedy. And it's tough to lose those good ones, those good horses, you know. And it happened to me twice with Landalusi and Swell.
Yes.
Well, I guess that was my luck. But still, you know, Swell gave me my first Kentucky Derby, and I will always remember him.
Well, and Landalusi, great as well. Her combined winning margin was 46.5 lengths for all of her races she won. That's what did she die from?
I'm sorry?
What was it again she died from?
I don't think they never find out what it was, but I think she got sick, something with the lungs or something. I think so, you know? And she never recuperated. She got sick, and I remember calling Wayne, and how is she? She said, well, she doesn't look good. She doesn't look good. And finally she passed away, you know. But that was sad, very, very sad.
Lafitte Pinkai Jr. joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Again, Lafitte, time is just flying by, but there's a couple questions I've wanted to ask you. I hear you're very superstitious.
Well, I really know that superstition, to tell you the truth. But when I started riding, before my first ride, my mother, she told me, she said, "Listen, I want you to wear your underwear inside out." I said, "Why?" And I said, "Because if somebody wish you wrong, it's not gonna work." So ever since that time, every horse I rode ever in my career, I have always worn my underwear inside out. And I remember there were a couple of sport riders that came down and he says, "Is it true you wear your inside?" I said, "Yes, I do wear them inside out." He said, "Show me," and I showed him, you know. And sure enough, I never missed. I just always did it, you know. So
you still do that?
But I did it because she told me.
Do you still do that, or was that just when you were riding races?
No, I didn't do it anymore. Only when I play golf.
No, you were also, you always made sure you were the last one to leave the jocks room when you were going to the paddock.
Yeah, that was a bad habit, you know. But the thing is, I wanted to go out and I just want to get on my horse. You know, I want to get out there and say hello to everybody and get on my horse. I was just so into the race, you know, concentrated. You know, it was hard for me to make conversation outside in the paddock, you know, so in the walking ring. And I just want to get on my horse. That's why I was always the last out, you know.
I get it, Lafitte. Now, let's talk about your family a little bit. You have... Tell us about your children.
Well, my children are doing very well. You know, my oldest daughter, she's married and she's got two kids, and they're very good kids. And she cut hair. She's a hairdresser, and she's very good at what she does. She does very well, and she looks great. And my son, you know him, he works on Channel 4, and I think he does a wonderful job, and he does the Kentucky Derby and all those big races, the Belmont, the Preakness. He's doing very well, and we're always in touch. And the little one, he's the one that I have so much trouble with. He's a little rebel, you know, but he's a good kid, and eventually he'll be good. He'll be a good kid someday, hopefully. But so far they're all doing good, you know, and I'm very proud of my kids.
What if your littlest, John Lafitte, what if he came up to you and he said, "Dad, I want to be a jockey"? What would you tell him?
No, I always tell my kids, you can do anything you want, but you are not going to be a jockey or a football player. None of those two. From they were little. My first son, Lafitte, I want to play. I said, "No, you are not going to play that, Lafitte. I am not going to let you, believe me." And I was right. You look what happened to this football player, all the brain injuries and all that, you know? That's very, very dangerous sport, you know? So I'm glad he listened to me.
Well, speaking of dangerous, Lafitte, you suffered so many injuries.
And I'm glad that they were big for jockeys, you know? So you were fine.
No, definitely. And obviously racing is the only sport where an ambulance follows us around the track. You know very well yourself how dangerous the sport is. Tell us, how many bones have you broken?
Oh, I broke a lot of bones. I broke my collarbone 13 times, and I broke my ribs. At one point, I broke almost every ribs in my back. You know, all of them. I broke about 10 of them, and that was very, very painful. I broke my wrist, my finger, my hip, I had a compression vertebra a few times, and my ankle one time. I broke my ankle, and when my last peel, I broke my neck. I was very lucky. I'm very lucky to be walking. I got to thank God that He gave me another chance to to keep going, you know, to enjoy my life. And yes, I'm you know what? I'm very, very lucky that my brain is still very good, because I hit the ground many times with my head. I have many concussions, and so far it's been good.
Was that hard for you to accept, Lafitte, when they told you after you broke your neck, and you were what, 56?
Yes, I was 56 years old when I had a spear and had to retire. Yes,
was
very tough. It was very, very tough, because not only I was doing very well. You know, I was doing very good. I was fighting for the rider again. I was eager to every day go on riding and competing, and my dieting, my eating, what I was eating was making me feel good. And in fact, after the races, instead of being the same way, I probably lost a pound or 2 pounds, and they gave me a chance to eat something that night, you know, without being worried about the next day I'm gonna have to go and go around the track and go in the hat box and things like that, you know. I was very confident that the next day I was just not going to struggle to do the weight, you know. So I was having fun again and winning races, you know. So it was tough, very tough when I hear that from the doctor.
Well, Lafitte, unfortunately, we are all out of time, but just amazing story. All you accomplished this many years you rode, struggling with your weight and injuries and everything like that. It was so great spending the last hour with you, Lafitte, and wishing you all the best. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Christine. Anytime. Anytime.
Folks, you can check out this show and replays of all of our other shows on the website. That's www.horseracingradio.net. While you're there, check out all of the other shows you can find on the Horse Racing Radio Network, like Trainer Talk, Equine Forum, and of course, Express Bet Radio. Be sure to join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Dallapina, I'm Christina McManigal, and thank you for listening.